You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Welcome in to the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Mike Schaefer, joined by Brian Christopherson, Michael Brunts here on Tuesday morning following Nebraska's red-white scrimmage on Saturday. We have plenty of takeaways. We're going to dive into that game. So let's just do it. Let's start right away. I want one and just one player, only one, not one on each side of the ball, not one on each position, not, you know, an entire unit. Just give me one player that impressed you on Saturday. Michael Brunts.
Ja'Cory Barney.
You there. Can talk about him now.
Okay. Well, we've been it feels like months since we've been kind of just sitting here like an idiot holding all this Ja'Cory Barney stock. And look who's the idiot now.
It's still us.
It's still us. Way. But, yeah. But
we have a fictitious better stock that you can't do anything with. We might as well be Packers fans.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Oh man, that was good. Slid in there well.
Shots are coming close. Yeah, I mean, you saw Ja'Cory Barney, the basically what he could do. I mean, you saw it on the nice touchdown catch. He's an extremely sudden athlete. He had not returned kickoffs much in practice at Nebraska and shows up on Saturday. They say, hey, we'd like you to think about, you know, maybe returning a kick or two. And the only thing that keeps him from housing that one is confusion about whether or not Tristan Alvano is a teammate. And, you know, by his own admission, was ready to celebrate with Alvano, and then Alvano tackles him. It's the ultimate heel move. He kind of lulled him into lulled him to sleep and then pulled him down. But I liked all that. There were a couple plays. I don't know if I was shooting photos down below, but there was a kind of a quick hit to the left side of the formation. Barney was actually out front blocking and put Jeremiah Charles on his back pretty easily. And, you know, Charles kind of got up a little bit pissed off that it had happened to him. But you saw the full gamut there of what he can be. A little bit of confidence, a little bit of swagger, too, from Ja'Cory Barney. You know, kind of said that people are going to be forgetting about that kick return when he brings one back against Colorado in week two. So that's already on the bulletin board, I'm sure. But just a great debut. I mean, I think he's everything that we kind of hoped he would be and thought he would be. It was a great debut. And also the Super Six is holding well so far, which is also a nice bonus with his performance.
Was BC, are you part of that Ja'Cory Barney Super Six?
I can't remember. I got to look at that. But I think it's fair to say I've been part of the fan club, you know. I think I've been pretty vocal about him. So I sometimes talk myself out of a Super Six guy, like in the last hour before it, who I had like fourth. So I don't know, but he was definitely in consideration if he wasn't on mine. And I mean that honestly. I'm not saying that after the fact.
He did not make the BC Super Six.
Oh man, that's too bad.
That's all right. You can still be part of the fan club. They're still accepting members.
All right.
So, all right. Your player that impressed.
You know, I always say, like, oh, we can't talk about it. It's Dylan Raiola. I mean, it just, like, raised the whole spring game. Like, from recruits to the people on the field to the fans, like, everybody, it just elevated that, made him walk a little taller. You know, just seeing it look so competent. And, you know, I wrote about it on Sunday morning, but the what I liked about him as much as the big throws were the ones he didn't make or the simple ones. You know, it's the stuff that sometimes has been made to look like a fire drill around here, like some of the slip screens and things like that. I know that he's not going against all the top defenders. Some key guys were held out, but it just looked really fluid, like on the 3rd and 10 when he hit Bullock. And I know, Schaefer, you were impressed on the it was Bullock again in the end zone on the two-pointer, like the touch he had to just put that. Like, that's not a throw that is that easy for a lot of guys to make, and he made it look pretty easy. Like, it just looked like a simple play, but it wasn't. And then he had the one that Rule appreciated where he's rolling to his right and, you know, on a 3rd down and he just eats it. He goes out of bounds with Vincent Shavers, wisely held up and knew who the franchise was. And, that was that, but I just liked, that he made good decisions and built those kind of habits, even in a scrimmage like this, where you might want to be daring and show something off. And he just stayed within himself, and it was a really solid performance. And honestly, I wrote this because the individual that I last felt like I walked out of a spring game, I can say this, where it was like, man, he really just got me, was DeMario Williams. That was like the last time, like, one dude, like, really just changed my thought about a side of the ball, or like, oh, that looks really good. That's going to be something. And I compared this with that. I wasn't necessarily surprised he did what he did, but it was still great to just see him do it in that sort of setting.
You were talking about Vincent Shavers there, and it made me – am I misremembering this? Was it Eric Martin that, like, roughed up a Nebraska quarterback and nearly got tossed out of practice by – I don't know if it was Tim Beck or Sean Watson at the time. I mean, like, do either of you remember this? Like, he inadvertently, I don't even know if it was inadvertently, but he, like, blew up the quarterback in practice, and it caused this whole thing.
I don't know if he did, but if it was Eric, Ed Cunningham was probably there and would want to throw him out of football for doing that. But no doubt about it. That sounds like something Eric might have done. He played to the whistle and beyond.
Yeah, I wish I could remember who it was. I think it was Eric Martin, and I just remember it being kind of like a funny big deal. All right, so you guys mentioned, obviously, Barney and Raiola. There's a couple different ways I want to go with this, but I would say the guy that – and I didn't have a lot of thought on him prior to Saturday, but when I saw him, I had to, like, double-check the number, and then he caught a couple passes and looked pretty good in doing so. He's a little ways down the depth chart, but Ishmael Smith-Flores – Did we know he's this put together? Like, he's looked big out there on Saturday. Like, I don't remember him as a recruit. I don't remember thinking he was, like, that physically impressive. Is this like a Corey Campbell situation? Have they put on a fair amount of mass on Ishmael Smith-Flores here in a short amount of time? Or am I just completely blowing this thing up in my brain?
Well, he was a basketball player in high school. And I think sometimes with those guys, like, it's a little bit it's easy, I think, once they finally stop playing basketball, for guys to put weight on. Because, I mean, you guys know how difficult it is for, you know, guys that play basketball to keep any meaningful weight on. But, he's a kind of the more kind of standard tight end that I think you'd kind of be expecting Nebraska to use as an inline guy that can also go out and make some plays. It's always interesting to me, the tight end room, because Ian Flint had a catch. You obviously know, you know, Thomas Fedoni's kind of a different looking, tight end from that. The rest of the group, Carter Nelson's coming in as kind of a do-it-all guy. They've got just it's like that old Nintendo hockey game where you can kind of have like a big guy, you can have a really skinny fast guy, you can have a medium guy. You just got to, like, figure out your mix, and he's probably part of that. So, yeah, I mean, Did you guys come away from that game feeling pretty good about the tight end room as is? I mean, even without Carter Nelson being in the conversation and maybe what that group can bring to the table?
Yeah, it felt like a little bit of a tight end showcase on Saturday. I mean, I thought that obviously Thomas Fedoni had a really good game and he was targeted early and often. Nate Borkature had that really nice catch on a great pass from Heinrich Harburg. And you mentioned those other guys that got involved. Yeah. I don't know that it's a product of now Marcus Satterfield also coaches a tight end, so the offense is going to involve them more. I think it's more so he utilized them successfully at South Carolina. I think they wanted more out of their tight end room in 2023. They weren't really able to get it through a combination of how the tight ends play, but also just the quarterback play. And so I think with different quarterbacks, and certainly you always hear about how a tight end can be a nice safety outlet for a young starting quarterback. I mean, I just think they have some interesting pieces, and he showed some different concepts and some different routes and different things that Nebraska can do with a quarterback that comfortably can throw the ball in the air. I mean, I think the tight end room, to me, the arrow is way up coming out of the spring. And it wasn't an area that I was thinking a lot about coming into Saturday.
How much of that is just like a quarterback being able to hit those throws? Because I feel like
a lot
they were really forcing them last year in a lot of ways, but it was like Thomas Fedoni's like trying to catch it back behind his head, like down at the ankles. Like it was like a it's like a catcher. You never knew where the pitch was going.
Yeah, I think that's – I mean, how many times did the ball – like, it's tough because you expect Fedoni to make those catches, but he had to try to make some acrobatic moves to even just get his hands on a few of them.
Yeah, and if you look at I just wrote about Fedoni last night. His numbers last year were 25 for 260, and I actually backtracked a bit and looked at some of the notable Husker tight ends from, like, the last 5 to 10 years. His first year numbers for like a first year starter stack up better than all of them, I think, like that first season. And so everyone who's kind of like, oh, where's I want more, you know, and all this for a guy coming off two, you know, surgeries and having gone, I kind of am buying what Rule and him were talking about afterwards, where like he got that full season in. Now he's not rehabbing this off season. And so I expect him to set a high bar for those other guys that you're mentioning here that you're excited about. So, yeah, that's my contribution to tight end talk.
Smith Flores is listed at 225. It just looked bigger than that on Saturday.
He played bigger.
Yeah. And I might just be making a mountain out of a molehill on the whole thing, but he looked big. He looked good. I wonder how he'll be used during the year. I mean, I think he's clearly behind Borkature and Fedoni, but and then Lindemeyer is going to be a heavy blocking tight end for him. But I am curious if they work some of those guys in, if we see, you know, further down the line with that tight end room. All right, let's move off of individual players. And I want to ask, I mentioned it. I thought he had a couple good throws. BC talked about Dylan Raiola. BC, what do you think of Heinrich Harburg on Saturday? And just the quarterback play in general.
I thought it was solid. I thought Harburg looked improved. I thought the one he hit to Borkature was his best throw, but he just played within himself. The ball looked good coming out of his hand. I think he was like 8 of 13 or something like that is how he finished. But that was part of it. It wasn't just the Raiola showcase that everybody wanted to see. You saw the other two, and you're like, I feel like they got some depth here, you know? And like as Rule said in the post game, and he was talking about from the standpoint of like, hey, we're going to try to shoot for a championship at this school. And if you do that in college football, you have to play like 16 games now. I mean, even if you don't get there and you're a good team, you're going to play 14 in a season. You are more likely than not going to need at least two and possibly, very possibly three guys. We've seen that in recent years. It just goes with the territory. And so that really elevated spirits, I think, to see Heinrich take that step. You could tell he felt confident in the way he spoke about it too. I like the sort of his answer too, where like I'm viewing it as I'm the incumbent, you know, they beat me out, and I'm sure they're viewing themselves as the guy the same way, and that's just going to help us get better. So I think he's got sort of the right mentality they need for that veteran guy in that room in this very situation they're in with these two freshman QBs.
Brunch, you brought up Ja'Cory Barney, so you get to talk about the wide receiver room as a whole. It wasn't just Barney. We saw good stuff from Jalen Lloyd. Isaiah Nair looked explosive on a play that got called back because of a penalty. The only downside of the day really was probably the injury to Demetrius Bell, but the wide receiver room in general, what are your thoughts coming out of this spring?
Yeah, I mean, I always hesitate to, you know, pound the table for how much depth is in a wide receiver group. Cause it always seems like you have less than you think you do. But I mean, you kind of went down the list there. I mean, we didn't even really see Jamal Banks do much in that game. I mean, I think that was maybe the thing that I was surprised by was he was, you know, pretty quiet for the most part. But yeah, I mean, I was eager to see what Isaiah Nair looked like. I'm really excited to see more of him on kind of those shallow crossing routes. He doesn't have what appears to be great speed, but he's such like he glides. He's a long strider, and I think he's got a really good feel for kind of running in traffic from what we kind of saw on Saturday. So I think that's a good piece of it. I mean, I think Jalen Lloyd is poised to be a breakout star for Nebraska. Even more so than last year, just as more of a complete wide receiver. I mean, obviously the speed is there. I mean, he ran past Jaden Doss when he wanted to. I mean, he was just kind of in a like second gear for about the first 20 yards and then just turned it on. And now Nebraska has a quarterback that can hit that route with more precision, which will help a ton. You know, Ja'Cory Barney, you just kind of go down the line. I mean, they've got a lot of depth there. Guys that are, you know, kind of a mix of everything. Guys that are, you know, can take the top off of defense. Guys that can, you know, get some work done in the shallow stuff too. I'm really excited to kind of see what that looks like. I mean, I think when you kind of have some more confidence that guys are out there are going to be able to, you know, not only catch the ball, but, you know, kind of you got a quarterback that can get them the ball. I mean, that gives a play caller a ton of confidence to call some different things. So I think they were kind of the story of the scrimmage outside of the quarterbacks in my mind.
Yeah. How about Janiron Bonner making the transition from fullback last year, getting the honorary Frank Solich carry. You remember that? And now Janiron Bonner is playing wide receiver.
It feels like this is more of like what they envisioned him being last year. Like, I know they see him long-term as a, like an NFL type fullback, but I mean, I was going back through the way they talked about him last year and kind of talked to him like he's a Swiss Army knife. And you saw that with the routes he was running, a little bit of the blocking in the backfield. I think they could probably use him as a tight end if they really needed to in certain situations. I mean, I think they're finally a little bit closer to maybe getting out of him what they thought they would last year. Cause I never felt like they were able to use him in the way that maybe they wanted to and that maybe his skill set called for.
We could almost make our own category. I feel like they need, and they might be able to do it this year, to get to like 3 to 5 sort of like niche guys who they're not like your headline players, but they're your Bonner, Lindenmeyer, you know, maybe one of the incoming tight ends like that, who they're your junkyard dog type of players, you know, that we could use basketball examples from the last Husker team, you know, like some of those guys who do some of that stuff, like, you know, an Alec or somebody, but they don't always fill the stat sheet, but they're going to give you, that, you know, the stuff that helps you in those, that short screen game and stuff like that, where you take a play that is a 2 yard pass and it's a 25 yard gain because you got that initial block by a 220 pound guy on the perimeter like Bonner. I also think that's why Garrett McGuire is pretty fired up to get Malachi Coleman back, is because he thinks he has that edge to him that's going to help them with those type of plays as well. But yeah, I think he's going to be a big part of it. I kind of thought he might be last year, but I agree with you. I think his role is more defined now to fit him and like how he can excel with this team.
This is a philosophical type question. Which one of you wants it? Who wants to get deep here on Tuesday morning?
Just ask it. We'll see. Like, yeah. Well, I'll be like, Brunch will take that.
What do you guys make of Jaden Doss playing both ways? As a corner and a wide receiver, and then you just sort of compare that with what we've seen from Jahnyron Bonner and how this staff just seems like they are more than willing to keep sort of rotating athletes that they like until they can find ways that they maximize the value out of that player.
I got a quick answer and then Bruns can pile on. I normally have hated it through the years because I feel like in college or around here in past staffs, when they've moved somebody, it's been like, well, forget about him. You know, like that he's just not going to work out in this program. But I think there's been examples, you know, an example or two last year. And then you look at Rule's track record where you could see, I'll give that some time. And I think players see that too, that this staff has had some success with that. So I don't discount it like I used to with this coaching group, because I think they just operate that way and they've done it with some efficiency before.
Yeah, I think Brian's right. I mean, I think this staff probably gets a pretty long runway on those kinds of moves. I think on a lot of staffs, it's kind of like you make that move and you're like one step closer to, you're like putting your shoes on, getting ready to leave. Like that's how what that position change is sometimes like. There's a couple that they've made that I think need some time to marinate. I'm really curious to see what Roquan Buckley as a guard looks like a year from now. You know, like I think he's body wise and size wise, I think he could be a pretty good guard. And it's just a matter of, you know, what the picture's like in front of him depth wise and how quickly he can come along. I really like that move. Jaden Doss, I was a little surprised by, I'll be honest, but I think that, you know, for as many defensive backs as Nebraska has on its roster right now and scholarship guys, there's an opportunity and perhaps a need for some corner depth. And, you know, with Bly Hill's situation, we still don't know what that actually is going to be long term from his injury. Maybe that opens the door there. I was just a little surprised, I guess, because I had the photo and I was like trying to figure out who the heck was playing corner, because they kept saying it was Rex Guthrie. And I'm like, any Rex Guthrie, guys. But yeah,
Did he practice this spring? Is he cleared?
He was in a green jersey, I think, for most of the spring. But I mean, maybe with an off season that looks a little bit better, but I think there's a need at corner, maybe more than what we were thinking going into the red white game.
So the reason I ask about this is, does it change how you think when they go and recruit these athletes? Because we always want to assign positions on it. We always want to be like, oh, they're bringing in four wide receivers and four defensive backs and two linebackers and three tight ends. When really it feels like they're just collecting athletes and feel so strongly about their ability to install and develop as football players that the position is so secondary. Maybe more with this staff than it feels like with a lot of previous ones that we've covered.
Yeah, I think you have to write it more loosely to the idea it could be either side than we used to. I've kind of been doing that lately. I think, you know, like Jeremiah Charles last year, I think was a receiver in like almost every recruit story I ever wrote about him. But, you know, that this staff never viewed him as, I think, specifically that. I'm sure Evan Cooper didn't. And I remember, was it the signing day where Rule said, it looks like we have a billion defensive backs, but we actually don't, you know, basically. You do have to get your mind around that it's not that defined for at least a year or so.
I don't really recall in the past them doing it, like staffs doing it as much with the lines, the way that Nebraska does. Because you had Mason Goldman that was kind of a flip. He ends up on defense. Machaychok, I feel like, has been on both sides of the ball. He was on offense this spring. That piece of it's always interesting to me, because I think in the past, I mean, you've heard some guys that, like, the player was given the opportunity to choose, even if maybe it was not where he, you know, probably projected long term. I'm thinking of like a Chris Walker who, you know, was probably a prototypical tackle and ended up on defense. And now, you know, was at least in the NFL draft conversation a little bit and was an all conference tackle at Montana. So I think, to go back to your original philosophical question, I think as long as there's a plan and it's communicated, I think that's better for everybody, because I think where you get into trouble is like, let's try you here. If it doesn't work out, then we'll move you back. And then like, you're just kind of in no man's land.
Yeah. To me, it just speaks to, you see a lot on the message board, or you'll get asked about, oh, or why are they taking so many tight ends? And I think a lot of it is, it's just a projectable body type that can move to different positions. Like you can have the tight end that, you know, he becomes AJ Rollins, he's playing defensive end. You can have a tight end that ends up as the reverse, where you have Jake Applegate go from linebacker to tight end. You could have the scenario, and I think we're going to see it play out with Ingerson or Ian Flint, where one of those guys ends up as a potential offensive lineman. Like, I just don't, you know, it's the same with Quinn Clark and with, there's another wide receiver they took last year that could just end up as a tight end too. Like, I think there's so much more interested in overall base athleticism and less interested in fitting in the parameters of a position, especially for like an 18-year-old that you aren't entirely sure how he's going to grow. It's just interesting. They seem way more outward with this or open about it. And I'm curious, kind of like you said, Brooks, how well that's communicated. Cause like, I know if a Tanner Church, who just committed here from Colorado, he's played mostly wide receiver. He's played defensive back. He said Nebraska's bringing him in as a defensive back, but he could also end up at wide receiver. So he's like, wherever they want me to play, I'm going to play. He doesn't really care. But I think they're just collecting athletes, and they're letting the rest kind of fall in as they need to.
You also have to convince guys that you can evaluate them properly to give them the best chance at the next level. You know, because you do find those recruits that you talk to them, you know, that I want to play this spot. Like they're the definite one they favor. So it takes the right kind of recruit that's like, you know, I am open to this. I actually trust it. They have to trust the staff enough to say, like, I believe that they're going to point me in the right direction to elongate my football career as long as possible. So it is an interesting dynamic.
I have two quick questions if we're done with the philosophical questions.
Yes, sorry.
No, you're fine. Talking about the offense, are you guys at least buying into the fact that Nebraska offensively might be able to use the quick game to its benefit this year versus what we saw last year?
Yeah, I'm bought in on it. I mean, so much of Saturday was just marveling at the exceeding competence of being able to line up and run a play, and guys were in the right spot, and the timing of the offense looked like it was normal versus last year, where everything had to be just this broken down play for Nebraska to be able to pick up first downs or what it was. So I just think that the timing and that allows for a more simplicity. And like you said, you can get some quick throws out there. You can hit guys right out of the backfield. You can hit guys immediately coming on, you know, just a quick tight end flat throw. We saw I think Fedoni, was it Borkircher, had one of those as well. So I think they have that. And then they didn't do a lot in the running game, but one of the things that stood out to me, and I thought they blocked it up pretty well, was just a couple of those inside runs of Emmett Johnson. I think that can be a nice weapon for them offensively. You spread teams out with your weapons wide receiver wise, and you get them thinking about defending, you know, 8 yards off the line of scrimmage beyond that, and then you hit them with a quick inside run, and you get a guy like Emmett or Ramir was really good at this in 2021 that just gets, you know, into the hole quickly, and you see the sort of burst they have, and I think that can be a pretty dangerous setup for what they want to do.
Ramir was the guy I thought about who didn't play the most on Saturday in watching how things were happening, because I think he has shown, even when Nebraska's really scuffled and, you know, really struggled at screen game and stuff like that, like, he's a guy who, if you give him the right QB and the right guys around it, he can really make those type of plays happen. And I think he could really benefit from, just like you're saying, the competence in operating that basic stuff. So I could see where he could really be useful in what they got going right now.
And my last one, we haven't really talked much about the defense, and it's hard to get a read on things because you can't hit the quarterback. There were certainly a couple completions where it was probably going to be a sack and a bad sack, but they allowed the play to continue. I counted seven, I think, likely starters that either didn't play or played very sparingly in that game. What did you make of the group that they trotted out there as like the number one defense or even the twos? I mean, do you think that they're going to be able to get as deep with the guys that they play in the fall as they did last season? And what were kind of your guys' thoughts on that side of the ball overall? We haven't really touched on that much.
I felt like a lot of Saturday defensively was like, don't let guys get hurt. You know, let your veterans rest. You got an older group on this side of the ball. You don't need to see Nash Hutmaker and Ty Robinson out there doing much because there's not that much to gain from it. It felt to me it was more about just letting some of your younger guys have an extended opportunity. And I think what we saw last year is just going to be similar to what we're going to see this year in terms of the amount of guys that play. I think they're just going to play a deep roster. I think they're going to make sure that guys are ready. I don't think they'll put anybody out there who's not ready to help them perform, but I think they'll make sure they have 18 to 22 guys that are able to, like the full two deep, are able to help them, you know, at various times throughout the year. Similar to the conversation about quarterbacks, if you got to play that many games, you get these nagging injuries. I mean, how quickly did they need Mekhi Bayer last year when guys were getting banged up in the middle of the field? So I think they want to establish that depth, establish it quickly, and then not be afraid to play those guys if they need to.
Yeah, I think they'll play about the same number. I mean, if you're walking out of that game with a concern point that maybe you didn't have as much, it actually is to me like cornerback, you know, like, as I think we don't know exactly what they have. We think they've got some good young players, but how ready are they going to be off the jump? You know, you're playing Colorado week two, who's going to test some guy who's hasn't played a lot of college football. And it was going to be that way even before the Blyhill injury. But I just think we had heard so much about his promise that it kind of buoyed spirits about that particular spot. And now with his injury and the uncertainty there, it's like, all right, it's Jeremiah Charles, somebody, you know, Boodle, I guess, was at safety. But, you know, so there's going to have to be a young guy that really steps up, a few of them, to fill those spots.
All right. Should we take a quick time out? When we come back, we can dive into some recruiting. Nebraska had a lot of visitors on campus over the weekend, and several official visitors, several more unofficial visitors. We got some of the scoop and some of the reaction from what they experienced. So we'll dive into that as we return here on the Husker 24/7 podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talking recruiting, Nebraska had 8 official visitors on campus. We've been able to catch up with several of them so far. It sounds like another strong visit weekend was had. No immediate commitments, which isn't a big surprise. So I do wonder if we won't hear of something by the end of the week or maybe into early May. You guys have reached out to various people too. By all accounts, seems like another successful visit weekend. And I think recruits are really vibing with where Nebraska wants to be going and kind of what they're hearing from this coaching staff.
I was glad to see Nebraska use the red-white game as a big event. Like, I know last year they weren't staffed in a way that they could do that. But, I mean, what was the attendance? Like 60,000 some? Whatever they ended up with. I mean, it's a unique environment. It's what, like 3/4 of a game day environment, let's say. But you get, you know, time around the coaches all weekend, which is nice. And I think it can be really successful. I mean, I'm kind of like you, Schaefer. I don't know that I'm expecting anything immediate, but it feels like they kind of set the table really well for, getting into the summer months with some of these guys ending up in Nebraska's class. I mean, the competition for visit weekends is so tough nowadays, and especially with guys making early decisions, that it's a bit risky to go first in April. But I think Nebraska did a pretty nice job. And even the unofficial guys, I thought they had a really impressive group of 26 and 27 recruits in town.
Yeah, completely agree. BC, I know you caught up with John Mills and a couple other guys, including Mark Bowman, the 2027 tight end, and then, of course, the Vandenbosch twins. So you had quite an interesting group. You had an official visitor in there, a couple legacies, and then maybe the guy with the most impressive offer list that isn't a 2025, and Mark Bowman. What stood out with their sort of takeaways from this visit?
Well, first off, Mills, John Mills, he's got 4 officials left, but sounds like a June decision shortly after those visits. And I think Nebraska really wowed him. You know, it was his second time to Lincoln in about 3 weeks. His mom got to come on this trip along with his dad. It was her first time here, and she just had an amazing time, it sounds like. The Riola factor is real. I mean, John got to talk with the whole family and Dom and all those guys and really connect with them. And, you know, all those players, when they feel like there's a future at that particular spot, it raises their interest like that. Yeah, we can win some games with that. I can see how that's going to work. And I think that was the way. But he mentioned this. Trent Sellers mentioned this out of Mobile, Alabama. Sellers said a lot of places they'll get you there, and the coaches actually won't be around you near as much as like you think they would be, basically. Like, here's the game and you get some time, but it's not a ton of time. And that really impressed like a guy like Sellers, and it impressed Mills, like just the amount of time they got with every coach. And Mills said, I got to talk with every single full-time guy basically, and I liked all of them. And so I think Nebraska's in a good spot with him. He's got some impressive offers or officials still ahead of him with like Texas and Florida and Washington. But I kind of like Nebraska after talking to him the other night. Like, he wishes he could go to that Nebraska-Colorado game after seeing the environment and like what that would be like. I don't know that he can, but he was just talking off the cuff how he hoped he could come to a game like that.
Brunts, what was sort of the reaction that you're getting with the calls and people that you checked in with?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of the standard response, you know, everybody's kind of blown away by the atmosphere. I think, like you guys said, I think the fact that the offense played well, I think that caught a lot of people's attention. I mean, you guys know how it is with spring games sometimes. I mean, they can kind of be snooze fests. I think the way that Nebraska actually set it up, where you basically play what you want to play in the first half, you get through the second half as quickly as you possibly can and get everybody home and guys can get on with their visits. But a lot of the guys that were unofficial visitors came in early on Friday and they got a full day in Lincoln. And then the red white game was kind of the end of their visit in a lot of ways. And, you know, the same thing that the official visitors talk about is just the closeness of the staff, the fact that everybody feels like they're kind of pulling in the same direction. There's just like they always talk about like a warmth almost to the way things kind of feel over there. And I don't think it's just, you know, kids kind of leaning back on things that, you know, that sound a little bit trite. So I think you talked to a few of the 26s too, Schaefer. I mean, Mason Bandauer, I think Nebraska's in a good spot for him. You know, Kamen Jensen, the big tight end out of Colorado, another kid that I think Nebraska's in a really good spot for, who has a really impressive offer list so far. So they did a lot of work, and, you know, we'll see what they can do now because the coaches are on the road. They can get out to schools and get around a lot of these kids again, just to kind of check in and evaluate.
Yeah, and they had a couple of important in-state guys in. You had Pierce Mooberry, Christian Jones, and Chase Lofton all stop by for unofficial visits. All of them had a good time. I think, you know, if you're Chase Lofton, and I know this because I talked to him a little bit, like you're at that game, you're watching Dylan Raiola do his thing. We were talking about the tight end plays. Like it's not difficult for you as an athlete, especially if you're on the offensive side of the ball, to look at Dylan Raiola and think, okay, how can that guy help me with what I'm going to do? How can I help him? How can we help the team? And you can visualize that pretty easily. He was unquestionably the star of the weekend. I mean, even the recruits like couldn't help but talk about him in that sense. You had multiple guys comparing him on their own to Patrick Mahomes and just kind of the way he conducts and carries himself. Dawson Merritt, an official visitor, his dad is Dave Merritt, the defensive backs coach for the Kansas City Chiefs. And he's telling me about how he and his dad were just comparing notes about how Raiola talks and acts and moves and does everything like Patrick Mahomes, and they want to bring him up to training camp and sneak him onto the field and see if anybody would even notice that it's a different number 15 in red out there. Like those are some pretty strong words from guys that have been around Patrick Mahomes for several years. I don't think anyone thinks that he's going to be that good that quickly as a quarterback on the field, but I think it's more how he carries himself, the confidence and all of it. And then we saw the arm talent. I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of quarterbacks we've covered in the time that all of us have been covering Nebraska football that have the kind of arm talent that he possesses. And so if you're a Michael Terry, if you're an Emmanuel Choice, two official visitors that are wide receivers, and you're at Nebraska's spring game and you're watching this guy and what he's able to do, it is absolutely a positive for Nebraska to be able to be like, yeah, that's who you're going to be catching passes from. But there's not a lot of question there. Like that's the future of this program. And so to be on display that way Saturday, I thought was really smart. I feel like they set up the red white game to really emphasize the offense and emphasize kind of these playmakers that they have, because they knew who was going to be in attendance visiting, and it stood out to them. And I, you know, going back to Dawson Merritt, not Raiola related, that's a guy I think Nebraska has a great chance with. It's Nebraska, Alabama. I would say it's truly 50-50 from talking with different people in the network. He had a fantastic visit in Lincoln. I would put him on my all-interview team already. Just a very, very energetic, infectious individual. And I can see why the coaching staff is a big, big fan of him. And he's really likes Tony White and Rob Dvorak, and they're going to be by to see him here in a couple of weeks. So that's a guy in Dawson Merritt. There could be a quick decision. He's already made the official visit to Alabama. He's got a trip coming up to Oklahoma. Doesn't sound like at least right now, it sounds like Oklahoma is pretty far removed from the whole conversation. So, pretty strong for the staff. You're already in a battle with Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, and I think they have a real chance of winning it with Dawson Merritt, a guy who would get you back into Kansas City, and that's an area where they would love to continue to have some recruiting success. Anything else we want to dive into here while we have the time today? Should we do a little transfer portal? Obviously, Chief Borders went into the portal on Monday. We anticipate more players will do so here on Tuesday. Do you think it'll be a relatively quiet in terms of who goes in? Like, or do you think there could be a big splash or two that we don't see coming?
Go ahead, Browns. You're ready to go. I can tell.
He's wound up. I always hesitate to say, no, going to be quiet. No, nothing to worry about here.
You don't want to tempt things. I get it.
No. But I think Nebraska is expecting it to be quiet. Like, I think they have a pretty good pulse on things. I think you have to nowadays. And, you know, whether or not they did it on purpose, I mean, the calendar lined up this way, but I think Nebraska kind of benefits by finishing spring practices so late. I mean, you basically have 3 days for guys to decide whether or not they're going in now. And, you know, maybe that forces a rash decision or two, but I don't think that there's going to be this mass exodus. I think they've done a nice job of roster retention to this point. And I would be surprised if there's a significant loss to the portal in the next, I mean, they have to be in today. So it could be out to Thursday, maybe, I guess. Yeah. But, I think that it will be relatively quiet, but I would not be surprised if you see a few names pop in there just based on depth chart conversations and stuff like that.
Graduate transfers get one extra day just to throw that out there.
I was a little bit surprised, and yet you take it for the climate we're in with Chief Borders entering. He had a good spring, so that there's that old school thought process where it's like, oh, he had a good spring. He was, arrow up here at Nebraska. But you also then connect it to, like, everybody else who's trying to get hold of guys heard he had a good spring. He's at a position of need that I would think does pretty well in the NIL market, things like that nature. So there are going to be cases like that where it's going to make some of us who still think with our 2014 brains scratch our head a little bit, but we got to, like, just move on and realize it's a different ball game out there when you see a name like that pop up.
I'm impressed you gave yourself 2014. I would have thought 2004. Hey.
Yeah,
I cheated. Yeah, I cheated a little bit, but I'm a very modern guy. 2014 would be the stretch of, like, when I still had, like, a little any sort of cool in my step.
Okay. Is there any particular reason 2014 is?
I don't think so. But yeah, that's about the most I'll give myself as far as, like, I'm still kind of connected toward my college days and youth or whatever.
Now you're just a man without a country? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, a little bit sometimes, yeah. Anyway, enough.
2014, Brian's cool, and Bo Pelini left town. Those are the two things that happened that year.
That's what
correlation? Bo leaves, DC stops being cool?
I was never cool. I don't want to act like that. I'm just saying
You were a 17-sport athlete in high school.
Yeah, you've talked about your CD collection that you had at Omaha North. We knew you were cool.
Right.
You're cool.
All right. That's enough for you guys. Follow up
cool guy Brian Christofferson talk, but I'll ask one last time, anything else we want to get into here before we mercifully end?
No, I think the cool talk is how it ends. Cool talk is the line.
All right, yep. Cool guy, give us a big finish here, Brian.
Why am I giving a big I don't have any cool to do that. Like, you're the one who, you've still got your youth a little bit, right? You're a young guy. You're a young man with your life ahead of you. You need to come up with the big finishing kick.
I'm going to embody the Jerry Seinfeld joke. I'm going to just basically dress like the last good year of my life for going forward now that I'm a dad. So that's what it's going to be. All right. Be sure to check out everything we got going on at Husker 24/7. We have more visit coverage rolling in, more official visitors to catch up with, and different guys that we haven't had a chance to talk to. They had a lot of people here on campus on Saturday, and we want to be able to run it all down. You can find that at Husker 24/7. We still have reaction and stories coming from the Red White game. You can find that stuff at Husker 24/7 as well. Baseball is in action on Tuesday, coming off of a couple of important wins against Iowa. You know, it's a midweek game. It wouldn't be a bad idea for Nebraska to not get swept by Creighton on Tuesday night, but we don't know how that one's going to go. So we'll see. And then, Bruns, who do they have this weekend?
Well, they've got Creighton tonight, K-State tomorrow night at home, and then a three-day trip up to the Twin Cities to take on the Gophers.
Wouldn't be a bad week to go 5-0. Would make people feel a little bit better about the kind of a rough month of April for Nebraska baseball.
Flipping the calendar tomorrow, though. New month.
Watch out, though. Minnesota baseball teams are hot right now.
do the Huskers play do the Gophers, they play the White Sox too? Is that where they're getting their wins as well?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, there we go. We are done. We have nothing more to add. Be sure to check out everything we got going on at Husker 24/7. We'll be back next week with more Husker 24/7 podcast content.